Hello, lovely listener. Welcome to Words in Progress, an ongoing conversation between two people who write for a living and for pleasure. Every week, we meet up to chat about what we've learned and share our top tips. But first, let us introduce ourselves. I'm Robert Mills, founder of Fourth Wall Content.
And I'm Christine Cawthorn, and I run a company called Crookstar. We're currently working together on a website project where I'm working as the content strategist and Rob's doing the content design. In this series, we'll talk through the challenges that crop up and how we get through them. Hello, content pals. How are you? We are back for our final episode of the Words in Progress podcast. It is the Project Retro. I'm Christine, and as ever, I'm joined by the wonderful, the incredible, the man himself is Mr. Rob Mills.
Hi, what a lovely intro. Also, episode 10, the last episode. Can you believe it?
No, I can't. It's the project that has kept on giving, I think. There's lots to talk about.
It's been great.
Yeah, loads to talk about today. Loads to delve into. How shall we do it? Shall we put a format to this episode that's slightly different to the other ones we've done?
Yeah, so I think, you called it a retro in your exquisite intro just now. So I think it would be good to cover stuff that we think went well, or good stuff.
Yes.
Maybe things that could have gone a bit better.
Oh yeah, loads of those.
Yeah. And then stuff that we learned, because we did always talk about in each episode what we learned in that sort of sprint or week or since we last spoke. So maybe some of the key things that we learned over the entire project duration, or things we tell ourselves.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And then maybe we should finish as ever with an ultimate top tip.
Oh, the top tip of top tips.
The toppest of tips.
Couldn't be any more top of those tips.
Well, I think that's set the scene for the rambles that will occur right now. So, okay, so let's think about what went well. Would you like to start?
Sure. Lots of stuff did go well, actually. It was a really interesting project because, as with any project, yes, there were ups, yes, there were downs, there were things that you would do again next time, there were things that you would maybe change. But I think collectively, there was a lot of things that went well, and that's largely down to the people involved and a willingness for everybody to achieve what we set out to. Because often with projects, there's so much enthusiasm and energy at the start. And I think we said in one of the earlier episodes, it sort of fizzles out like a firework, and then we got sidetracked by the word fizzle. Yeah. But I felt like, aside from a few sort of dips in maybe energy and progress and things like that, there was quite a consistent willingness to change and courage to be involved. And everybody on the client side, busy people, they always made time to fit in work around this project and make time, and they responded to things quickly so we could keep momentum going. And so I think that just went really well, that sort of collective collaboration and enthusiasm and support of one another.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. I felt like we got buy-in really quickly, and it felt like we were on the same side. And I think that's really important. If the team doesn't gel, or some people in the team are less sure or less willing to change, that can really slow you down at the beginning. So when you have a team or a group of people that are ready, they sort of know what to expect, maybe, or you come in at the right time, they are expecting change. That's always a bit of a catalyst. Then you can join and you're immediately like, okay, how can we get this stuff done? So yeah, I would agree that definitely went well.
Should we just like take it in turns? What went well?
Okay. Does that mean I go next?
Yes.
So one thing that I thought went really well was the amount of listening that happened. So I think we've talked about this a few times in some of the episodes. I thought that we were really listened to. So as the outside people coming into the team, I felt that we were listened to. And I also thought that we listened well as well. I mean, that's always something that on reflection, I always think, oh, I should have done more listening. I was very keen to talk. I should have listened more. But I did feel that we did a lot of listening and a lot of adapting due to that listening. And that's something that, yeah, it really worked well. I think in this project, there were a lot of nuances that we needed to understand before we could make the right recommendation, for example. So, but yeah, on the other side, the team were very respectful of other experiences that we had had, and so were willing to give us the benefit of the doubt and accept what we said. So yeah, I thought that was, it showed a lot of respect in the team, and I enjoyed that part of it.
I agree. And I think that really became noticeable, that sort of respect and the like really active and supportive listening when we did hit challenges. I remember there was a particular time where in a meeting I had said, I can't remember what it was exactly. It was in an early episode. It was something like, I think we're either going in the wrong direction, or I don't think we know enough to decide what direction or something. And it was almost like putting a bit of a pause on everything to sort of take a step back and reflect. That's what I was asking of everybody, I suppose. And I felt like I was being listened to, and the response to that was really positive. And we collectively again agreed to do that.
Yeah, I remember that episode. I remember thinking that you'd been brave in speaking up to say, this doesn't feel right. I'm doing work that I'm not sure about and it doesn't feel right. And actually, as soon as you said it, it felt like everybody said, oh yeah, actually, me too. I knew something wasn't right. So yeah, that's a really good example. Over to you.
Thank you. I think another thing that I felt went really well was there was a good balance between leading and supporting. And it's going to be hard to talk about this without sounding like I'm blowing our own trumpets, but we went into that project to lead, to advise, and to sort of try and show the way and show alternative ways of working and et cetera. As a collective, we were asked to do that. So we were definitely leading. But as the project went on, the people on the client side, they started to lead. And then I slip back or step back into a supporting role, which is like absolutely the way it should be. And that was really, it was just amazing to see the confidence grow in some people over the course of the project. Like the ability was always there and the knowledge definitely up from them, but it was just lovely to see the confidence grow. And I guess just speaking for myself, being able to flip from like leading certain work and to just supporting and literally being asked to do things as and when they needed. And I thought it was a sign that a lot of the work we'd done was really falling into place and was the right approach. Our processes had been tested and refined and now they were working, which allowed for that change to take place. And I just think it was, an indicator of some of the success we'd had as a project team, really.
Yeah, it was really nice to see. And I think part of that is the trust that you built up in those relationships to be able to switch from leading to supporting, because that can be quite difficult, especially if you've got lots more stuff that you need to do. Or sometimes people talk about feeling the need to control things. And so to be led, to allow yourself to be led, can be difficult, or to move from a leading position to a supporting position can feel difficult because your role is changing the way that you might perceive people perceiving you. I don't even know if that makes sense. Changes, how do people see me? I see myself as this. Oh, now people see me as that. That can be difficult to manage just for yourself. So yeah, that's tricky. But yes, I agree, that did go well. We are helping them to be able to make those decisions. We're not just coming in and saying, right, we can fix it. Okay, bye. It's teaching them how to be able to make those decisions themselves. Because obviously there will be decisions down the line that will be different, but they'll have the frameworks or the experience now of this project to be able to make good decisions, or just make decisions.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. It wasn't a case of going in and this is how you should do it. You know, we had some ideas of how they should do it based on previous experience and being based on what was asked of us and the reason why we were brought in the first place. But the approach I think we took was, let's figure out how we should do it together, because you've got all this like knowledge around the organizational structure and culture and relationships and all that stuff. And then we've got, experience and knowledge on things that have worked in the past and things that we can at least try and start with. But again, it sort of comes back to some of those points around listening and respect and trust and those relationships that I felt like those relationships got really good really quickly, which is nice. And again, probably because of the willingness of people wanting to change and collaborate and work towards a shared goal. But I think all of those things meant that certainly I found when I was having like one-on-one conversations with people, I would always ask, you know, this is how I think we could, for example, improve this bit of content, or this is what I think we need to consider, or these are the questions I think we need to be asking, or what do you think? So again, getting the other person to sort of contribute an equal amount. And I also experienced it from the other side, where when somebody else was leading on something, they would ask me what I thought. And I think it was just that way of working and just being honest and open, people being confident to share their opinions, but also people not being so egotistical that they were going to grab onto them, even if they weren't quite right. You know, everybody was just willing to do what was best for the sake of the goal or the project or the team or the business or the users. And I think that was, all of that sort of was part of this whole moving from leading to supporting across the duration of the project.
You've just made me think of something that can be a challenge sometimes when you go into a project and you don't know anyone else. You don't necessarily act in the same way that you would in a different project if you knew someone. So when you go into a project and you know someone, and we went into this project and we knew each other, we were able to be quite open and quite collaborative and obviously quite friendly straight away. And I wonder if that had an influence or an impact on the team dynamics, because if you don't know anyone, you have to build all of that from scratch. But if you do know someone, there's a shortcut there. I know you, I know your intonation, I know your style, I know the rhythms in which you speak, the patterns. I know when you're happy about something, I know when you're unsure about something. So when you work with people that you've already worked with, you have a whole shortcut to ways of working. You don't have to get that worked out. It's you're straight into the work. Whereas when you go into a project, but you've got to understand the dynamics, you know, you're setting those dynamics and then you're maintaining them, or you're trying to shift them, or you're trying to influence, or, you know, you're trying to do different things. You're trying to get on a level with someone so that you can work together in an equal way. That's really difficult, particularly when you're in a project where you're also trying to deliver something at speed. So there's, a lot to be said for working with people that you know, because you can do shortcuts with that kind of team forming stage.
And the differences were notable between the project team we were working with on a day-to-day basis and others in the organization that came in at various intervals. The people like subject experts, for example, we didn't know them, and we were already like quite a bit into the project when we had to get to know them. And so, yeah, there was a definite difference between what those relationships were like. I'm not saying they were like negative relationships, but they were just different. And it was nice as well when, as a project team, a lot of us got to meet together in person at a local event during the project. I think that kind of solidified the sort of just the relationship between everybody. And at the start of the project, we were having, you know, daily stand-ups, and we were having a lot of like screen time together and meetings together. And then eventually we sort of reduced that to twice a week and so on, because that just better suited, you know, the needs, the project and everybody involved. But I think seeing each other every day for the initial part of the project also really helped build and solidify and nurture those relationships.
Yeah, I agree. So my last thought about what went well was, we sort of talked about this already a little bit, but the changes that we were suggesting, or the changes that we agreed together as a team, were broadly accepted. Obviously, there were refinements to make, but it felt like we got stuff done. And that's always a good, when you feel that you've made progress, it's always a sign of a good project.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just a willingness from everybody to try as well. So, you know, we're going to suggest something. People accepted it with a caveat that if it doesn't work, we'll try something else. And that's not always the case. Sometimes people want to know, this is definitely going to work before we even commit anything to it. And you can't guarantee those things. And so I do feel like the team on the client side really did sort of take that leap of faith with us, you know, when we did sort of suggest things around what to change. And yeah, you're right, it did help us get stuff done. And if things didn't work for whatever reason, we were able to quickly understand that they weren't working and why. And then sort of, to quote a wonderful word from a popular sitcom, we could pivot as needed.
Pivot. Yeah. A lot of trust, actually, isn't there, in doing that stuff? I think I really felt that the team getting on well is a huge part of a project. And when you're in a good project or you get on with everyone, you really take it for granted. And then sometimes you're in a project where you don't know anyone, or you just, for whatever reason, you're just kind of not clicking with certain elements of the relationships or the projects or the tasks, and it can feel very difficult. It's extremely distracting to the work if you don't have the trust and the relationships and the team bonding in place. Certainly for me, I feel.
It definitely impacts on the energy, I think. And also when it's not working well, the time is spent on those relationships, and it's sometimes at the detriment of all the other stuff that needs to get done. And that can then, and then it's almost like a negative cycle, isn't it? Then it, that becomes hard, and it's a slippery slope when things aren't going well. But I'm just grateful in this case that those positive relationships were evident.
Yeah, it was good vibes.
Good vibes. Oh, I got one more. I forgot it was with me. My third and final what went well. Well, lots went well, but the third one I'm going to share in this retro is more on the sort of practical and operational side, where I think we had clear processes in place from the beginning, which really supported good delivery and comms. And also when there were challenges, it allowed us to, again, thinking of what we've already shared from that previous episode, when we were up against a challenge, actually knowing how to approach that challenge, like in a meeting, or, you know, we had weekly retros. We were working in sprints, we were only 2 week sprints. So we had like daily check-ins that became twice weekly check-ins. We had retro, we had sprint planning. So we had those, dare I say, agile ceremonies. But I think just generally, you know, the way we were using Trello and Slack and all those kind of supporting tools and stuff just really helped us as a remote team who all had other priorities. Like nobody was on this project full time. And because of the circumstances, knowing who was doing what and when and where things are at and what was coming next, all that kind of stuff was really important.
Yeah, I agree. I was really glad we had good delivery support, because it kept us on the straight and narrow when all around us other things were changing and we were changing them. But yeah, to have the check-ins with people, the ceremonies to support our communication, yeah, really important. Really a lot of respect for keeping a team of part-time remote workers together and aligned is not easy. So yeah, that was a joy to be a part of, because it just felt easy.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Well, that was all the good stuff. Yeah.
Now it gets tricky. What could have gone better? Who would like to start? Why don't you start, Rob?
Okie dokies. I think that in hindsight, it would have been good to share and communicate the user journey map and the user needs, and actually some of the other sort of assets and outputs and research and findings and insights, all those things that you collect in a project. I think it would have been good to have shared them with the wider team earlier, so that when they were brought in, they had some additional context. I felt like there was certain roles in the project, there was a lot of catching up to do and a lot of having to explain things several times, not because of the person not understanding it, but just because there was such a gap in their understanding of what we'd done, because we had sort of ring-fenced it a little bit. And at the time that felt right, because it's like, well, we don't want to sort of expose everybody to everything, because there's, you don't want to overwhelm people. And there were lots of like valid reasons at the time for doing that. But yeah, I think it might have helped just to share stuff a bit more often, like little and often perhaps, just to help people when they were then sort of brought into the project for whatever reason.
I have a really similar one, which is managing stakeholders earlier. And I think it's really similar. I think we're having the same idea here, because in the beginning we said, let's get something done. Let's do not a quick win, but let's do something in this new way, and then we can show everybody how we've done it, and we can talk through, and it will be a tangible example in the organization so they will understand. Then we don't have to explain each stage in real detail before we've done it. We can talk about something that we have done and we can show that it's a success. We didn't perhaps do that quickly enough, or the bit that we'd chosen to do it turned out it was more complex than we thought, isn't it always? And so, yeah, I felt like by the time we brought some of those wider stakeholders in, we'd sort of been creeping around doing something in secret. And then there was almost more to explain who we were, what we'd been doing, why we'd been doing it. No, honestly, we were supposed to be here. We've got the backing of this high up person and that high up person. No, but honestly. And so, yeah, I think it took a while. And I don't know if it's because we were working remotely. I don't know. Maybe that's just an excuse, but I felt like I didn't quite get a handle on who the stakeholders were. The makeup of the organization is, well, complex, obviously. I've yet to work with an organization where it's like really simple. But because of that, it wasn't maybe as clear as it could have been. I feel like I should have tried harder to understand who we needed to consult or who we needed to talk to or who we needed to get on side earlier or just make aware that we were doing this thing. And so, yeah, then we ended up in a situation where, like you say, we were explaining things again and again and again. But perhaps that could have gone differently and been a bit more smooth. I don't know whether we needed to manage upwards more and get the support that way or try and generate the interest ourselves. It's difficult because you're trying to protect the team so they can do the work. And you're also trying to talk about the work in a high enough level way that people are interested, but they're not sort of so involved that it's slowing you down getting the stuff done. It's just such a difficult thing to manage because it's also in the ether, isn't it? It's not a physical thing that you can control. It's like, who do we tell? Who knows what? Who's talking to whom in the background? And unless you are there and you're bumping into people, I always think it's quite nice when you're able to be in the building with people and then you're going for a cuppa in the kitchen. Let me just have a little 5-minute catch up with you. Oh, yeah. You know, let me tell you this thing that we've done. Oh, yeah, we'll let you know about it next week, but drop by my desk. I'll show you what the team's done. Maybe I'm old fashioned, but that always helps, I think, those little micro conversations that you don't really get to do when you're working remotely because you have to schedule a meeting every time and it suddenly seems more formal and then suddenly such a body's been left out and, oh, we didn't know about this. Yeah, it can feel a lot more difficult to have those spontaneous conversations when you're working remotely.
And for some of the like stakeholders, the only sort of contact they had for a significant part of the project was the fortnightly show and tells. And so it was half an hour, I think they were scheduled for. So that's a very short amount of time for everybody to present and then for everybody who was attending to sort of digest and then ask questions and to have any sort of discussion. I think the show and tells worked in many ways, but it was also the show and tells that I think were the indicator that they're hadn't been enough sort of engagement with certain stakeholders or subject experts because of the amount of questions or because of how often they had to follow up. And that was the first sort of, yeah, like I say, indicator was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, we want people to have questions. That's great. That shows they're listening and they're engaged and that they're interested. But I think you're right that for some of them, it was just a fortnightly short formal sort of forum with which to receive and share information, and in some cases that just wasn't enough.
Maybe we were only showing them the sanitized version as well. We weren't showing them the nitty-gritty because we didn't want them to think that we didn't know what we were doing, but actually maybe we should have shown more messiness to say, hey, this stuff is really difficult, help us figure it out. But I wonder whether we didn't, and this is maybe kind of leading into my other what could have gone better, but I don't know if we really showed the vision. Here's what we're trying to get to. And I, as we know, was working on the content strategy. And the way that I decided to do it was to show them each piece, to work on each piece of the strategy and then show them the whole thing at the end. Look, we've created this thing together. But now when I think about it, I wonder whether I should have said, here's what we're aiming for, a thing that will cover X, Y, Z, A, B, and C. Here's what we're aiming for. We're working on this part. And when you show that vision, here's what we're getting to, here are the steps we take to do it. It's a balance, isn't it, between showing the work and showing how you're doing the work. Mm. That's difficult. I think that takes a lot of skill to be able to tell the right people the right amount of information or are they somebody who wants to know everything before they can buy in, or are they happy to be thinking about that stage in the process without necessarily thinking about the next stage? They're just concentrating on this bit. So yeah, I'm not quite sure, certainly, that I managed the content strategy communication as well as I could. I've made the decision not to overwhelm by saying, here's all the things that are going to be in it, because I wanted to work on each bit at the time and just focus on that one section. But actually, maybe that's a trust and control issue on my part. Maybe I could have trusted everybody to be able to cope with the idea that we will look at these seven areas, for example. So yeah, that's always stakeholders management and how much to communicate or what part to communicate. Are you talking about the work? Or are you talking about the process of the work? I think different bits are interesting to different people at different times. So yeah, that I feel could have been better.
You're absolutely right. I mean, striking that balance, and it's not just one balance, as you say, it's like different people have different balances of what they want to know and hear. I saw it with some of the content that we were sort of presenting. It was very brief in some ways, you know, sort of a couple of headings, a couple of bullet lists, a few sentences. There wasn't a lot of content to show at certain parts of the project, but the time it took to get that content so sort of succinct and distilled and clear was a lot of time and a lot of effort. But I think sometimes people think that shorter content must be easier and longer content must have taken more time. And it's not necessarily the case. I would probably find it easier to write 2,000 words, you know, just like sort of blurt it out, as opposed to 200 words that are considering business goals and user needs and style and tone and voice and accessibility and content design principles and all those other things. And so again, it's like, do we tell people all of that thinking and research and insights and process and all of that stuff before we got to the point that we're at where we're showing them content? Or do we just show them the content? And again, it's not like one answer for all. It's one answer, depend on who you're speaking to. So yeah, you're absolutely right that that was a key part of the project.
Went well, but also could have gone better.
My last what could have gone better, because it's about the content itself. Now, lots of the content went well in terms of like the process for creating it and how it tested and et cetera. But the first piece of content we chose, there were lots of reasons why we chose it. It made sense at the time. Great. But actually, the circumstances that we were creating content about were changing as we were creating content. So it was like the content was immediately out of date. And it was very hard to catch up with ourselves then, because a lot of the, I guess, guidance or information that was feeding into that content came from an external organization. And so we were reliant on them sharing information at a certain time and sort of signing off on us being able to, you know, communicate it. And also the more that we were doing, the more sort of things we uncovered, and we were writing about like certain schemes. And like, actually, by looking at that scheme, we've now just realized there's this scheme. And so it was all sort of crumbling beneath us in a way as we were creating content. And that was really hard, because in some ways it was good, because we really learned a lot quickly up front. But in some ways it wasn't good. And what could have gone better is that this was the first bit of content and the first time we were doing this process and working in this way. And we were trying to engage the subject experts and stakeholders and the, you know, the team that we were working with themselves. Even though they were bought into it, we still wanted it to be successful for them. And I felt like that particular piece of content just put us up against it a bit unfairly in some ways. And actually, much later on in the project, we didn't even publish that content in, because the whole like need for it just no longer existed. And perhaps that itself was like worthwhile going through that process and learning, do you know what, things do change, needs do change, and this is how you can sort of navigate those.
It was so distracting, wasn't it? Because we were like, look at this thing we've done, yeah. How amazing it is. I remember it was like, oh, things have changed. Oh, now we look like fools. And we look like we don't know anything. And actually it was distracting, because the process by which that content had been created was really good, was very thorough, lots of research, it was accessible, it was user needs led at the time, of course. And yeah, like you say, it became out of date so quickly that it looked like we just wasted time and didn't show the rigor by which it had been created, which was a real shame, because it was such a good piece of content and it was so different to the thing that existed before. It was such a good example of this is what you could have and look how much easier it is to use.
But then it also, again, a negative that could be a positive is that it highlighted other things that we needed to sort of focus on. So like when we were asking for feedback and say, well, it's incorrect, it allowed us to realize, okay, we need to work more closely with this person who can get the information like more quickly, or who is able to tell us that, right, that thing has changed, you know. And it did highlight relationships and processes and things that could just be improved or refined more long term. So it was by no means a waste of time. I just think as a sort of ta-da, here we are type of piece of content, it did not do its job.
It was like one of those little party bits of paper that roll out, but they lean downwards.
Yeah, it had a little hole in it. So it sort of just went part way and then...
It was a deflated balloon. Yeah, it was a shame. But like you say, loads of learning out of it. So on balance, in hindsight, a good experience to have gone through, certainly near the beginning. But yeah, at the time, was certainly felt like a damp squib. Okay, so speaking of hindsight, what did we learn? What would we tell ourselves if we were to go back in time?
I think one key thing for me was over-communicating as a way to make sure there was engagement and as a way of like convincing. I think that was a constant priority with the media team we were working with. And we already said how getting that balance right with others as they came into the project later on was tricky. But I think because we were remote, because we were part-time, we did over-communicate in some ways so that nobody felt like they didn't know who was doing what and when and what was going on and what their involvement was. And also as a way of being able to convince people as well, because that is a key part of the work we do, isn't it? That sort of that convincing. So I felt like that was constant priority for us, really, certainly for me, to make sure. I don't like it when people feel like they don't know what's going on if I'm working with them, or people have to ask for things, or, you know, I just don't like that. I don't like to be the person that's being chased and things. So for me, I would much rather be like, here's everything all the time, and then if it's too much, let me know, and then we can find a new way of sort of sharing and things. So yeah, I think I found that to be a good approach with the sort of project team we were working with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. And yeah, you are a very good communicator. You're quite disciplined in how you work and what you're doing each day, and you get everything done that you're trying to get done. I feel like I'm a bit more fluid. Perhaps this is why it's always good to work with you, because you will communicate and then I'll think, oh, maybe I should do that. I have a similar idea, actually, that's around anticipating what will happen. I felt like we were good individually and as a team at anticipating what would happen, but I felt that we were not necessarily good at interventions. So we would maybe anticipate that some stakeholders would be unhappy about something, but we wouldn't always proactively go and try and manage that situation. Sometimes things played out and I would sort of think, or we would think, oh, well, we knew that was going to happen. Why did we let it happen? Now we have more work to do to try and make this better. So I felt that maybe, well, when reflecting and preparing for this episode, I was thinking what would have helped, maybe some of those closer relationships with some of those wider stakeholders, as we've talked about already. Maybe just, and I think we've talked about this before as well, but maybe just being available to listen rather than trying to actively manage. And I think that's a real learning for me in this project, is sometimes you just can listen. You don't have to try and fix everything. So I thought maybe some regular meetings, maybe one-to-one, maybe in small groups, I think that would have been helpful. Because I think for people that are going through a process like this or a transformation project like this, there's a difference for them between knowing where you are on the journey and being okay with it, being reassured, right, this is normal for this stage, and just knowing where you are, or kind of not knowing where you are, but not really feeling supported, not feeling like you can talk about it. So we, and certainly I, could have been more, I felt like I could have provided more security for others around that kind of bumpiness of the journey. because there were a few times where I thought, oh, yeah, that's totally normal for this stage. Yeah, we're freaking out over this. Yep, that's about on schedule. When you've done a few of those sorts of projects, you know, the same sorts of things happen. You know that you're going to get through it. You've got a strong vision, or you've got the tools, techniques, you've got the process for getting through it. And I think maybe because also we weren't full time, it was difficult to provide the space for that, to give that reassurance for people to say, yeah, this is difficult. This is normal. How do you want to play it? Do you want to talk about it? You can manage that in loads of different ways. But yeah, anticipating, I thought we were good at anticipating, but not always good at the intervention. They're kind of, right, let's head this off, or let's have a word in someone's ear here. And the people that do that in other projects that I've worked in, I'm discovering a whole new level of, wow, respect for those people that are able to see what's about to happen and then to just do a little nudge so that everybody is feeling calm, reassured, maybe not happy, but certainly confident that we'll get through this this phase.
Interesting how so much of what we've shared in this episode is about people and relationships and communication. You know, we've touched on it, but we've not talked a lot about the tools that we used and the processes we had and the outputs. You know, we designed workflows, we created prioritization sort of grids. There's stakeholder mapping, there's being user needs, user journeys, user flows, all sorts of flows that we've mapped out. There's just been style guide stuff. There's just been loads of like outputs and things, but it all comes back to the people and the communication and the engagement and the collaboration and the relationships. And again, I think that's true in all projects and all organizations of different shapes and sizes. So interesting that, not unexpected, but a nice reminder, I think, through having this conversation, how the people are just, they can literally make or break a project. And sometimes the content, the actual writing of content or the content creation seems like such a sort of minuscule task compared to all the other stuff we have to do. And yeah, so I kind of like that the good, the bad, and the sort of main learnings and advice have very much just come back to people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really nice observation. Because yeah, it always is, isn't it? It's always about the people. Are they happy? Are they confident? Are they motivated? What's getting in their way? What's going on that means that they can't focus on this thing? People hate change. I love that I work in change. Someone tries to get me to change something, absolutely not. Will resist, obviously. I have to be cajoled as well.
Yeah, it's weird. Even if I know it's a positive change, I'm still like, oh. Even if it's a change I actively want and seek, I'm still like, well, with caution, Rob, with caution.
Easy. okay, what else?
I think picking up from what we were just saying about the outputs and the assets and the things that we created as part of this project, one of them was that we'd mapped out this entire user journey, and the content we were focused on was like a portion of that. And I think sometimes we got lost in the weeds of that and we didn't keep going back to that wider journey often enough and keeping that journey in mind, because the content we were focused on was impacted by things before that part of the journey and would impact on future parts of the journey. And so whilst we needed that focus, I just felt like, yeah, sometimes it would have been good to sort of take that step back and reflect, right, actually, what impact is this having? Are we creating issues or gaps or overlaps? Like, how is this fitting in with a wider sort of content ecosystem? Because there's a lot of content on the site that they already said themselves, we don't need, shouldn't be there. And I think thinking about the impact of what we were creating, like actually, does that now mean that we can remove some of that content with confidence and et cetera? Like, look, you know, I won't go to the big list, but there were lots of considerations off the back of creating content that maybe we could have been considering either more often or a bit earlier, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because often when you're creating content, you're only thinking about that one bit, and you think that that bit of content has to do all of the work. And I was giving some training on content design over the last couple of days, and we were talking about the difference between marketing and kind of sales. It wasn't quite an organization that does sales, but completion of the task. And actually the marketing, the telling of the story or the rationale as to why you need to do something shouldn't be on the page where you're trying to get the thing done. Those are two separate bits of information and two separate stages in the journey. And of course, when you're creating content, you think that you're going to go and hand some of this bit of content. This is going to tell them everything they need to know to do this one thing. And actually, that's not right for digital content. You're coming to that content because you know that you need to be there and you know you need to get that thing done. Telling someone to get to that content comes before that bit of content. And so we're often trying to put too much into that one stage or that one piece of content. So seeing the wider journey, even having it mapped out and adding in that awareness stage and adding in that stage at the end that's about maintenance or governance can be really eye-opening for people that only ever work on the creation stage. They're like, this is where my work is. And actually, even if you're not responsible for the other parts of the process, the other stages, to see it in context suddenly makes your bit have to do much less of that work. We don't have to tell everybody everything right here. That 50 pages that you've created is probably a little bit too much when actually the thing that they want to do there is actually 2 pages worth.
Exactly that. And it was quite a complex journey in some ways because we were focused on a particular area. And so we were aware that other content in that journey wasn't going to be looked at for a while. And so there was going to be a bit of inconsistency for that period in how the content was written and presented. And also there was a lot of sort of signposting to external content that we had no control over, and some kind of acceptance of the fact that exactly that, we can't control that. As much as we'd love to rewrite everybody's content all over the internet, we can't. And so, yeah, keeping that in mind, but not getting derailed by that. So there were lots of different sort of, I guess, components to consider with the journey and the bit that we were focused on at any given time.
You can also get distracted, can't you, about the way that the organization works when you're creating content and when you're looking at that process. Suddenly you start talking about legal or policy or finance or, you know, whatever front of house teams, I don't know, whatever the organization is, but suddenly it makes you start looking at everything. And then suddenly you realize that your organization is inefficient. So how can we possibly present this process or this way of doing things in a way that makes sense to someone who's never seen it? Whoa, the curse of knowledge is suddenly weighing me down. I can't possibly describe this simply because it isn't simple. Yeah. And suddenly, you know, you have to go through that kind of existential crisis. I must have overused that phrase this year. you get really overwhelmed before you can then start to understand that process or how to present that process or that information in a way that is much more straightforward. It's always going to be complex, but how can we kind of hide as much of the silliness for users as possible? And then suddenly, of course, people then realize that, oh, we're not just transforming the content. This is about the way that we work. And then I think that's why you need so much hearts and minds stuff, because it's not about content. Content is about everything else. Oh, I feel like I need to lie down.
We're not finished yet. Is there anything else that you would tell yourself or that you're sort of learning, do you think?
Yeah, I think there's one more thing that has been on my mind a bit, and it's about the recognizing that it's hard to walk the line between making exceptions or allowances or just avoiding a difficult conversation. And nobody likes a difficult conversation. Oh, wait, that might not be true. Maybe some people love a difficult conversation. I'm not one of those. I like sunshine and rainbows and kittens, and I want everybody to be happy all of the time. But sometimes you have to tell people something that is difficult, or you have to hear something that is difficult. And I find that difficult. And there were a couple of times where I thought, I wonder if I'm making an allowance because I don't have because I don't have the energy to tell that person no? or is this a legitimate instance where we would have an exception? Maybe I'm not quite senior enough to be good at that yet, but that was on my mind a few times. I felt like I was getting persuaded by people's arguments, and then I sometimes go away and I think, oh no, I don't know if I've made the right choice there, or I don't know if I've let them get away with something that isn't quite right, or whether that's just how it is here and this is part of the process. So
it's hard to know, isn't it? I think it always feels a bit, whatever you decide to have the conversation or not, I always question that choice, whichever way you go anyway, because there's so many things to consider. On a side note, when you said sunshine and rainbows, I'm now going to have favourite things stuck in my head for the rest of the day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a few of my favourite things.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
Bright copper kettles.
Warm woolen mittens. Is the season.
Oh, it's season.
Sweater weather.
Cozy season. We need to put this podcast out very soon, otherwise this is not going to make any sense.
True, yeah. Yeah, next spring when we're talking about, where's Britain? You never know.
Yeah. If you're listening to this in May, just focus on the rainbows, perhaps, and the sunshine.
Yeah, there's something there for everyone. But no, it's definitely a hard line to... So much of what we do, though, is, isn't it? Like, yeah. We say, the balance between when to have the conversation or not, and when, how much to share or not, and all those things. It's just... Which is why there's no one way of doing things.
Yeah.
There's like a toolbox of things, I guess, that, you know, can be a good foundational starting point, but they always have to be adapted and refined and changed depending on the organization and the people and the context and the users and all that stuff. I guess that's what makes it fun, isn't it? No two projects are the same.
No two projects are like, it's difficult, isn't it? Because sometimes you're good cop and sometimes you're bad cop.
Yeah.
You need to be able to flex. You need to be able to say no. I think I just need to work on saying no with a smile. Or maybe I do say no with a smile and that's confusing.
I'm too needy to be a bad cop, I think, but it's necessary sometimes.
I think you could do it.
Yeah.
You're too smiley right now though. No, way too smiley. Oh. I'm not gonna believe you.
No. Oh well. I will practice on that. By the time our next project comes around, you won't recognize me.
I'll be like, turn that frown upside down.
You're like, never working with him again.
He's so moody.
Right. We are almost good for time, I think. So in every episode, we took it in turns to share a top tip from what we'd learned in that sprint or since we last spoke, however long that was. And so to round off the entire first season of our podcast and our retro and our last episode, we are going to share our ultimate top tip each.
Shall I go?
Yeah, take it away.
Woo! Okay, so my ultimate top tip is to keep the focus narrow. And this, I thought, was really difficult. It's always really difficult, but you have to recognize that you can't change everything. You may want to, people may want to change different things. They will find it difficult to prioritize, so will you. So my ultimate top tip is to keep the outline of your project and your work particularly very defined, very achievable, because it is much better to do one thing well than to do five things half-heartedly. So actually there's a book called Essentialism that's about making progress on one thing. If you spread your energy over several things, you won't make as much progress on any of them. But if you just do one thing, you will put all of your energy into the one thing and get that thing achieved. So maybe pop it on a post-it note. Couldn't let the episode go by without mentioning my favorite tool. But just try, if you can only do one thing, then that is marvelous. You have done amazingly well. So that's it. That's it from me.
It's a cracker.
How about you?
My ultimate top tip is to identify who is involved with content as early on as possible, regardless of their role. So whether they're fact-checking, whether they're writing, editing, publishing, archiving, like whatever their role is, and you know there are many, identify them as early as possible. So, you know, the owners, the gatekeepers, who can say no, who can say yes, the subject experts, the stakeholders, and sometimes one person is multiple things. When you start a project, you often get told, like, these are the people, but there's always more people. And, you know, it can take time to find them all and figure them all out and and engage with them all. But I think asking the right questions up front will get you to those people sooner. One of the key people that I worked with on this project was a translator. We did some amazing pair writing and trio writing work, which you talked about in a previous episode. And like when we started the project, that was just not even a thing. Like, how are we going to consider bilingual content and translation and all that kind of stuff? I don't think that knowing that person sooner would have necessarily have had any different or more positive impact on what we were able to achieve. But I just think there's value in actually being able to, as much as possible, map out all those people and then sort of think about, right, do we need to do some kind of stakeholder engagement matrix, or do we need to do a race CHR or whatever, so that you've always got that thing to go back to? Because I just felt there were too many unnecessary instances where we were maybe not talking to quite the right person, or the chain of people was too long, etc. So I just think understanding everyone who's involved and when they're involved and how they're involved as much as you can would better serve, you know, your work, your relationships, and also from the other side, their work and their relationships too.
That's a good one, actually, because even if you spoke to someone and they said, oh, I don't need to be consulted, then at least you know. Better to have a 10-minute conversation with someone that says, no, it's not me, than not find them. And then later on they say, oh, that is me. Where were you? Why didn't you tell me? So yeah, I'm definitely going to do that next time.
Also, some people may say, oh, actually, I don't need to be involved. And it's like, well, no, you do for like this reason, or I really need to be involved. And it's like, actually, it's not really your role, you know? And so again, it comes back to those awkward conversations. But I think, yeah, just understanding everybody who's involved. Because as we've said, so much of this just comes back to people and relationships and communication. And if you don't know who you're communicating and why and when and how and all that kind of stuff, then it just adds on time and sort of effort that could be better spent elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Love it. Love your top tips. Love your learnings. Loved working with you. It's been emotional.
Right back at you.
Oh, what are we going to do now?
We're going to keep working with each other because there's already another project on the go. And we're going to record, we're going to start planning season 2.
Season 2 is going to have a slightly different flavour, we think. We are going to talk about our personal writing projects.
So it's going to be one 30-second episode. I don't have time to run. Thank you for listening.
Well, in the meantime, you can always join us in the Croxstar content community. You just go to croxstar.com/community. You can join us. We're in the Slack. We're chatting. We're putting on events. We are sending you emails. We've got loads of plans. So do join us. We would be delighted to chat all things content with you, whether that's work-related, personal-related. Yeah, we will welcome you with open arms.
Definitely. And some of the more recent events have been clear content and plain language, how delivery managers can support content and UX people, the trio writing that we mentioned in this chat. Lots of good stuff. Love to see you there.
Loads of good stuff. And hey, if you want to do a talk or an event for the community, you can also let us know. We are here for all of your content needs. Thanks for joining us over the last 10 episodes. We are looking forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you very much. See you soon.
Bye. Hey, just a bit of a plug here for the Croxstar content community that Rob and I run. It's a free to join space for all you lovely people working in content. The community brings people together to share tips, solve problems and chat things through, so no more struggling on your own through tough challenges and lonely afternoons. If you sign up, you'll get our newsletter, invites to our monthly events, plus access to our Slack group where we ask and answer each other's questions, have a bit of a laugh and obviously share pictures of our pets. It's a lovely supportive space and we'd love to see you in there. Want to join? Of course you do. The sign-up form is on croxstar.com/community. And of course, if you join, you'll also get access to all the recordings of our past events. We recently had a panel on helping you get a job in content. We had a plain English expert and we've also had a session on translation. So there's something for everyone. See you there soon.